Welcome to Let's Talk Health, a community radio initiative of the Community Health and Social Services Network, funded by the McGill Training and Human Resources Development Project. Our show today is Self-Esteem, Communication, and Teens with Ruth Martin, Counselor. My name is Kelly Howarth, and I will be your host today. I'll start by introducing Ruth Martin to you. Ruth Martin has a Master of Education in Counseling Psychology from McGill University, and she's been counseling teenagers and their parents in schools and in private practice for almost 20 years. Ruth has spent 4 years counseling Anglophone students and their families in the Saguenay region of Quebec. She has led workshops in communication skills, assertiveness training, self-esteem building, and educational and vocational planning. Ruth has facilitated Girl Talk and Boy Talk groups where important topics of interest to teenagers were discussed, including body image, relationships, family issues, drug and alcohol use, sexual behavior, and identity issues. The main focus of Ruth's work has been to help teenagers understand themselves better and overcome any obstacles or personal problems that may be blocking them from taking control of their lives and reaching their personal goals. So hello, Ruth. Thank you for being here with us today to talk about self-esteem and communicating with teens.
Hi, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
So most of the material that you cover is based on which work here?
The work of Glenn R. Schiraldi, and he wrote a wonderful book called 10 Simple Solutions for Building Self-Esteem.
So tell us, what is self-esteem, Ruth?
Self-esteem, and remembering it's a word that's been used quite a lot and sometimes can lose its meaning because of that, what it really is a realistic opinion of ourselves. That means that we see our strengths and we see our weaknesses accurately, and we appreciate ourselves with those strengths and weaknesses.
So what is healthy self-esteem then?
When we have a healthy self-esteem, it's the belief that we're worthwhile as anyone else, not more and not less. So it's remaining humble, realizing that like everyone, we have a lot to learn, and it's not the same as being self-centered, self-absorbed, or selfish.
How do we achieve healthy self-esteem?
Achieving healthy self-esteem means that it's an attitude, actually, and it means that we have to believe that we are worthwhile simply because we're human beings and not base our worthwhileness on external signs like our appearance, gender, race, age, job titles, grades, popularity, our financial status, or who our family is, for example. So it's a choice we make to actively love ourselves and care for ourselves and encourage ourselves to grow.
And growth, that's a very big one. Mm-hmm. How do we encourage ourselves to grow?
Well, Dr. Schiraldi would say we have to think of ourselves like a plant. If you plant a seed for, say, growing a flower or a tomato, you plant it, and then you don't stomp all over it after that. You plant it, and then very patiently you take care. So with a plant, you'd add water and sunlight and nutrition, and for ourselves, we have to be patient with ourselves and give ourselves the same kind of support to grow well. So what follows with that is accepting our lives with ups and downs, because there's always going to be both, and not insisting that things be different than they are. So it's a real acceptance of reality. Along with that is that we have to accept that we are not perfect. So we have to maintain a sense of humor and be able to laugh at ourselves and nurture a positive attitude.
And that strikes me as hard. And I ask you then, why is it sometimes so hard to achieve self-esteem?
It can be especially difficult to achieve self-esteem if, as children, we've been overly criticized or rejected or in some way abused. People who have healthy self-esteem have usually been respected and loved and encouraged. And in fact, there are studies that show that angry, rebellious children were more likely to have been neglected, rejected, or bullied. And this has resulted in feelings of being uncared for and worthless, and sometimes leads to people being angry and alone, and that affects their self-esteem negatively and makes it harder to keep that positive attitude.
So then we're talking again about positive attitude and its importance to self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Ruth, how can we nurture and maintain a positive attitude even if we have been rejected?
Well, as Dr. Schiraldi would say, we need to clear away negative thinking. And there's a lot of literature on negative thoughts and replacing negative thoughts with positive thoughts. And some of the negative thinking that Dr. Schiraldi would recommend that we try to kind of eliminate from our thinking process is what he calls all or nothing thinking, which is, for example, I have to be perfect. There's no ifs or buts. That's it. I have to be perfect. Also, be careful not to be labeling yourself as stupid, I'm a loser, anything like that. Also, overgeneralizing. I'm not very smart. I can't do anything. Assuming. And I've seen this often when I worked in schools with students. They would come to see me about a teacher and say, I know she hates me. And when we would kind of explore that a little bit, we would realize that it was an assumption that the person was making.
And we just build that up in our minds, in other words.
Yes, exactly. And then there's dwelling on negative and rejecting the positive. So, you know, do we complain a lot? Are we putting the focus on the negative in our lives a lot? Then there's making unfavorable comparisons. And this is one that I guess many people do and teens do a lot when they compare themselves to their peers, comparing themselves to other students in their class and saying, I'm not as smart as that person, or even in their own homes, I'm not as smart as my sister, I'm not as pretty as my sister, I'm not as, you know, smart as my brother, as strong. Then there's having too many shoulds. You know, I should have known better. I shouldn't have done it that way. And then there's when we catastrophize, and that means when we kind of predict the worst all the time. Everything's going to go wrong, and I'm going to fail. And then there's when we take things too personally, meaning that we think we're responsible for everything that happens. And even though the facts don't support that, it must be all my fault. And then another thing that needs to be changed is blaming. Sometimes putting too much responsibility for what happens on someone else is the problem, and always blaming somebody else. So these are a few of the good examples of negative thinking that affect positive attitude.
Now, one other points are important for us to understand about self-esteem.
Well, Kelly, most important is, I think, realizing that people with self-esteem are not necessarily brighter, more attractive, or more skillful than those who lack self-esteem. The difference is in the way they see themselves. If they dwell on the negative, that prevents them from enjoying their self-worth. Life is challenging. And it's very important to create ways and opportunities to enjoy ourselves because we know that happiness increases self-esteem. And to be happy, we also need to work on our communication skills. Communicating well is linked to self-esteem in that when we don't feel good about ourselves, we are less capable of expressing our feelings and getting our needs met. The less our needs are met, the worse we can feel about ourselves, and so on. It becomes kind of a vicious circle.
Yeah, I'm noticing that cycle about it.
Mm-hmm.
So then why is communication so important for teens?
Well, most conflicts between teens and their parents or other important people in their lives are due to lack of clear communication. Okay, the word commune means to feel in close touch with. But what happens is words get used as verbal weapons to try to get someone else to do what we want. So communicating clearly can solve problems, because it gets to the feelings behind the arguments. And sometimes teens are reluctant to share those feelings because it makes them feel weak or vulnerable, or they're afraid someone's going to take advantage of them. But it's very important in solving problems to learn to communicate feelings well.
And what are some of the principles of communication that we and teens and their parents can keep in mind?
Well, now I'm going to refer to another man's work, Michael J. Bradley, who's written a couple of great books. One is called Yes, Your Parents Are Crazy, and the other one is called Yes, Your Teen is Crazy. And he put those catchy titles in there, I guess, to get people's attention, because what's in those books is excellent. And he gives some tips for teens in terms of communicating, and he gives tips for parents. So if we look at some of the principles for teens and all people, actually, in communicating what we need to keep in mind, he says talking about feelings is fine, but yelling and screaming causes the other person to stop listening. So if you've ever noticed when you're yelling and screaming, somebody gets kind of glassy-eyed, they've tuned out, it's because they can't hear anymore when the yelling and screaming starts. So if a discussion gets heated, it's really okay to suggest putting the conversation off until you or the other person has calmed down. Usually there's not a urgent decision that needs to be made right away. Then it's important to let each side speak without interrupting. So that means while the other person's speaking, you're not preparing what you're going to attack with the next time you speak. You're really trying to listen. It's very important not to judge the other person's feelings. Everyone has a right to those to their feelings.
Positive or negative, huh?
That's right. That's right. And you can hear sometimes people will say, how could you even feel that? That's ridiculous. And it's really important not to go there. The other thing that's important is negotiating things. Try to go for a win-win, not demand. So you're trying to come up with several solutions to work towards that situation. And it's very important to stay calm until you find a common ground.
And how can we learn to communicate better with our teens?
Well, this is where Michael Bradley's really has a very long list, and I'm going to highlight some of the ones that I think are really helpful in his tips on how to speak and communicate with teens. First of all, using fewer words. Sometimes we tend to go on and on, and the more we talk, the less they listen. It's also very important not to repeat ourselves over and over on the same point. The tone of your voice, keeping your voice low, helps. They tend to listen better when the voice is low. Using I statements, so speaking more about your feelings than what they have done wrong. So it's really focusing on your feelings, which you want them to hear, as opposed to judging them. So it's good to kind of organize your thoughts before you talk, so you're sort of in charge of where the conversation is going to go. Also, that way you don't cram too much into one conversation, because that can be overload, and they can only take a certain amount in at a time. Also, and a lot of us fall into this little trap, don't go to ultimatums unless absolutely necessary. That's really important. And some people jump to the big, you know, ultimatum. Sometimes let your teen have the last word and give them room to disagree. This shows them that you're respecting, that, you know, you don't have to have control over everything, that you can actually let them say something last. Don't be afraid to apologize. Okay, it teaches our children about respect, honesty, and courage. And very importantly, choose our battles wisely. So if what your teen wants to do is not dangerous, illegal, it's probably a good idea to let it go. Stay calm and respect your teen's feelings. And very importantly, they really don't like being laughed at or mocked. So it's very important not to do that. Now, I would sort of summarize all this by saying it's very important for communicating to create opportunities to spend time having fun together when there aren't any heavy issues going on. Research shows that time spent with our teens is the most important element in increasing their enjoyment, their happiness in life, and ultimately their self-esteem. And it's good for us too.
It does sound very positive. So how can we increase our enjoyment of life and add to our happiness, given all what you've said about self-esteem and communicating with teens?
Well, I have some things I think it's really important to remember, Kelly. And one of them is that we don't need to be rich to have fun. Simple things are enjoyable when we're with our teens and together. Remember, adults need to play as well as children do. So if you're going to spend time as a family, spend time with your teens, you have to know that you have a right to have fun, even if you're leaving some things to the side that need completing. There's always more to do, always, in our lives. So it's important to know that you're deserving time, no matter what else there is that you need to do, and deserving of pleasure, even if you have flaws and weaknesses. And most importantly, is to remember that happiness is an inside job. It comes from the inside, and it's not dependent on your outward appearance or other external signs. So, basically, in conclusion, creating healthy self-esteem and good communication is within everyone's reach. You have to be patient with yourself and try to enjoy the process.
These sound like wonderful tips and wonderful books, Ruth, that you've just talked about. Would you just recap some of the resources for our listeners that
mm-hmm.
they might refer to?
Sure. I'll mention again Dr. Glenn R. Schiraldi's book, 10 Simple Solutions for Building Self-Esteem. And under that, he says, How to End Self-Doubt, gain confidence and create a positive self-image. And then there's the great work of Michael Bradley, Yes, Your Parent is Crazy, or Yes, Your Teen is Crazy. And in, they're very large books and with many, many tips and explanations about how teens think, how adults think, and they're wonderful. There's also Richard Carlson, who is the man responsible for the Don't Sweat the Small Stuff series. And he wrote two interesting books, one called Don't Sweat the Small Stuff for Teens, and the other one is Don't Sweat the Small Stuff with Your Family. And his skill is having people divide out, sort of separate out where you really want to fight your battles and where you want to live in the moment and let things go by that really aren't important on focusing on. There's also a wonderful website, and I'll give that to you, www.familyfirst.net/parenting/socialskills.asp.
They sound like great resources, Ruth.
Mm-hmm.
Ruth, thank you so much for talking to us today about self-esteem and communicating with teens. We hope that you, our listeners, have learned more about this important topic. I'm Kelly Howarth, your host for Let's Talk Health. Thank you for joining us today. Have a great day.